You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Jonathan Capehart sitting in for Leonard Lopate. Dumpster fire. However you felt about this past year, the American Dialect Society has just declared dumpster fire the word of the year for 2016. Other nominations include nasty woman, bad hombre, woke, and cuckservative. Joining us now to talk about the language of 2016, from words and euphemisms to hashtags and even emojis, is Ben Zimmer, the language columnist for The Wall Street Journal, who also chairs the New Words Committee for the American Dialect Society. I'm very pleased to welcome Ben back to the show, although this is our first time.
Yes.
We're not going to be alone in this, Ben.
Okay.
Because we're inviting you to give us a call if you have any questions for Ben about the buzzwords of 2016. What phrases might catch on in the new year? Give us a call at 212-433-9692. Now, Ben, of all the colorful runners up, do you know why the American Dialect Society declared dumpster fire to be the word of the year for 2016?
Well, it was an interesting process. This just happened at the American Dialect Society's annual meeting, which we had in Austin this year. And the Society's been doing this every year since 1990, picking a word of the year sort of on the model of Time's Person of the Year. And this time around, we had, you know, more than 300 people in attendance at the vote for Word of the Year. There was a lot of animated discussion about the various nominees that people were putting forward. So people were coming out in favor of dumpster fire, I think, because it was a way of describing events of the past year in a way that was colorful, was evocative. It really sort of showed how many people were upset about what they perceived as a kind of catastrophic or disastrous situation, whether it's in politics or otherwise. So it is a term that's been around, you know, being used as a metaphor for about a decade. But really, over the past year, we saw people embracing it as this colorful term. There are plenty of other colorful terms, some that we can't use on the air.
I've got the list of words we can't use. We haven't discussed, so I can't tell you to say any of them. But, you know, I sort of recognize dumpster fire as a sort of popular term, of course, during the past election. And usually, 99% of the time, it was pertaining to something that was happening in Donald Trump's presidential campaign. But it was also accompanied by the gif of an actual burning dumpster.
Yeah, that was one way that we saw it popping up on social media quite a lot. Not just to say 2016 was a real dumpster fire, or this election was a real dumpster fire, or the Brexit vote was a dumpster fire, whatever you're referring to, but to accompany it with an actual animated gif of a fire in a dumpster, in that trash receptacle. Or you could also use an emoji combination. If you combine the trash can emoji and the fire emoji, that was another way that people were sort of representing it. So we have all these sort of new tools at our disposal, especially on social media, sort of new ways of communicating, including hashtags, emoji, and GIFs, and so forth, that we're using in to accompany regular text, the textual form of language.
Okay, so you just cleared something up for me. Since you are, you know, from the American Dialect Society, it is GIF. It's not GIF.
I think that if you look in dictionaries, for instance, they will say that both pronunciations are acceptable. Oh. I personally prefer GIF.
GIF. I'm taking your lead, and I'm taking the lead of Ben Zimmer from the American Dialect Society. He is also the language columnist for The Wall Street Journal, and we want your calls to talk about all of this. 212-433-9692. Ben, so dumpster fire was the word of the year. What came in second, and what came in third?
In second place, we had the word woke, which is a term that, you know, originally comes out of African-American English, basically meaning socially aware, socially enlightened. That's a word. Actually, it has a long history to it. There is evidence of it being used in African-American slang going all the way back to the 1960s. We've heard it more recently in the past few years, especially relating to, you know, social justice, racial justice, the importance of being sort of aware of racial inequality and that sort of thing. In the expression "stay woke," we actually looked at it a year ago in our hashtag category because mm-hmm. that was a popular.
I've used it.
Yeah. So hashtag stay woke. That was a popular a year ago. Since then, woke just as an adjective, or you also get like wokeness as a noun, is something that's proliferated even more. And so people were recognizing that. Again, these don't have to be brand new words that we
right.
look at, but they have to at least be newly prominent.
Right. Repurposed yeah. words, if you will. And what came in third?
Well, it was normalize, actually. Normalize came in third place. And we defined that to treat as if normal that which was previously deemed beyond acceptable bounds.
Mm-hmm.
So we heard a lot about normalization. Again, much of this was in reference to Donald Trump in terms of things that previously had seemed unacceptable but were now being treated as normal. And it was very often in a negative formation, basically saying, don't normalize this, or, you know, resist normalization.
Okay, so we've just talked about three of the top three words. And one word I could have sworn would have been in there. Maybe
yeah.
it's number four or number five. But all over my Twitter feed, maybe it's just who I'm following.
Yeah.
Is the word yes.
yeah.
And how I don't know how many A's and yeah, S's yeah. you have to put at the end. But that was all over my Twitter feed. Did that
yeah.
even come up?
No, but
at the meeting?
We did talk about that, I believe. 2 years ago, it actually came up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
not
yeah.
just, oh, so I'm the see, I'm the one who's not woke enough to realize that yes is old. So two
well,
years ago.
Again, you know, this slang can kind of percolate for a while and then sort of come up to people's attention. You know, we had a whole slang category this year as well. And, you know, again, the words there were very few that were, you could say, were actually new, you know, something like woke, which we mentioned,
mm-hmm.
or slay, which Beyonce used to great
slay.
Effect.
Slay. I mean, there's there's slay, and then there's yes, queen, and
right.
it's all part of a genre there. But
absolutely.
Okay, good. Slay made it.
It did. But again, I mean, that you couldn't call that new slang, but it was certainly newly prominent in large part thanks to Beyonce.
Mm-hmm. Were there others? Because I cut you off in my sort of exuberance.
Well,
the
in terms
word
of
slay.
In terms of slang terms, we also looked at receipts. As in, show me the receipts
mm-hmm.
to mean proof, and also fire as an adjective, which could be used basically as a general superlative, also for something that's cool or fun, stylish, exciting, whatever. That's so fire, and you can of course use the fire emoji, which is sometimes read as lit, another slang term meaning roughly the same thing. So you can use a slang meaning that's assigned to a particular emoji. In this case, the fire emoji.
This is so much fun. Let's go to Peter from Glen Ridge. Peter.
Because you're talking about Twitter. My word is Twitter it. It's not illiterate. It's not literate, but it's barely literate. 140 characters or less. You're
okay.
Twitter it.
Twitter it. Is that a positive? I'm not quite sure. Peter.
I don't know if it's positive or negative. It's like you can't say he's illiterate. Because he can read up to 140 characters at a time.
Oh, he has a limitation on his, I got it. So
barely literate, let's put it that way.
Okay. What do you think of that, Ben? Twitter it, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's funny. Ever since Twitter started, it's attracted all of these blends or portmanteaus, combining Twitter or part of the word Twitter with another word. And so, you know, Twitter it combining Twitter with literate is a nice example of that. But yeah, we've got lots of twa words, you know, that have proliferated with the advent of Twitter.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, in for Leonard Lopate, speaking with Ben Zimmer, the language columnist for The Wall Street Journal, and also with the American Dialect Society, talking about how the word, well, it's two words, but dumpster fire was the word of the year for 2016. And you were talking about how Twitter has been combined with other words. Another word that's been, well, a couple words that have been combined. We were talking about Brexit,
sure.
Bremain.
Mm-hmm.
There was also, I think, Grexit.
Right.
And then there was another something exit?
Well, Grexit actually came first when the idea of Greece leaving the European Union was first came up. It didn't actually happen, but a couple of economists actually coined the word Grexit for that scenario. And then once Grexit became popular, then it sort of spun off in other directions, including Brexit, for the imagined scenario, which became reality, of Britain voting to do that. And so since Brexit became such a big thing, it has spawned off all these various things. So you mentioned Remain as the people who wanted to remain in the European Union. But also that exit ending has been used for all sorts of things. So say if California wants to secede, you would call it Calexit. Or Texas, it would be Texit. Or, for instance, when Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie split up, they're, of course, called Brangelina, so that got turned into Brangelexit.
We can carry these things a little too far. I want to remind people they can call in with their own language questions or new words. Like Peter from Glen Ridge just told us, his was Twitter it at 212-433-9692. You know, talking about Brexit and Remain, and you didn't mention Chexit, which I like the way it's written, and it is fun to say. But it sort of it reminds me, or is in the tradition of Watergate, and how we add gate to everything, a scandal and the cover-up that ends up turning the scandal actually into a real scandal. This is something that goes on all the time. Just exit is the latest iteration of that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we see the way that people are creative with language. Again, they're often smashing parts of words together. But then those word parts can sometimes function as new combining forms, we call them. And so gate or exit used as a new suffix, it becomes available to people to repurpose, reuse for new situations. Of course, it can sometimes be a little hard to figure out just based on the word parts what's being combined. But if you have something that people recognize, like now people recognize exit from Brexit or gate from Watergate, then you can combine it, and it's a kind of a shorthand so people know what you're talking about without having to spell it out in some longer formation.
Okay, so here's a word that I'm looking at that I have no idea what this means. Is gynotician? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes. Okay, so that takes the gyno prefix and attaches it to titian, as in politician. And so it's specifically talking about a politician who might think that that he sees himself, since it's typically a he, as able to speak about women's health care and legislate on women's health care. And so that's sort of a creative blend that's come up to describe, you know, politicians who are seen as interfering with women's health care.
Mm-hmm. And fact aside, I think is pretty explanatory, a fact that like kills itself.
Well, more like the killing of facts. So you know that goes along with a lot of what we've been talking about with like post-truth, post-fact. So the idea that facts are just being mercilessly slaughtered in the post-truth era is what that's getting at. And facticide is actually one that people have come with over the years. It goes back many decades. But again, it seems particularly resonant now, as does, you know, I mentioned post-truth. That came up in our political words of the year and was also chosen by Oxford Dictionaries, which has its own word of the year selection as their word of the year.
Right. Dictionary.com chose xenophobia. Merriam-Webster chose surreal. Mm-hmm. Anybody else come up with words of the year that we're not?
Those are the main ones. Yeah. So American Dialect Society started this whole word of the year thing back in 1990. And since then, dictionary publishers and others have followed suit. And it's become a big thing. So actually, there are other dictionary publishers in the UK like Collins who do this as well. And we also actually see word of the year being selected in foreign countries in the languages that they use. And so it's become this kind of global phenomenon now. But the American Dialect Society was the first one and we think is still the most prestigious one.
My guest is Ben Zimmer, language columnist for The Wall Street Journal. We're talking about the words of 2016 and this crazy year in language. I'm Jonathan Capehart, in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Oh, I'm Jonathan Capehart in today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. I am speaking with Ben Zimmer. He's the language columnist for The Wall Street Journal, and we are actually having maybe a little bit too much fun talking about words. The word of 2016 from the American Dialect Society is dumpster fire. We talked about how surreal was the word for Merriam-Webster, xenophobia was the word for dictionary.com. One of the words that I don't think made the top three, but we were talking about woke was one of the words. And stay woke, hashtag stay woke, was something that came about this year. And it's a hashtag that I've used. And, you know, hashtags, it's amazing that they weren't invented or someone hadn't thought of this earlier, because you can say so much, express so much emotion with just that little pound sign and a word or two. Was it invented as a result of Twitter?
It was sort of in the early days of Twitter, when people were looking at ways of organizing conversations on Twitter so that, for instance, if you were attending the same conference or the same event, you would know to follow a particular channel. And it was a fellow named Chris Messina, who didn't actually work for Twitter, but sort of came up with this as a way of doing it. And it caught on right away. And it was also called a hashtag right away, indicating that it was a hash mark, that pound sign, that was used as a tag for tagging conversations. But very quickly, people started getting very creative with hashtags and using it not simply to say, you know, hashtag such and such conference or whatever that I'm attending, but all sorts of uses for political activism and so forth, and very often very sort of humorous ways of, you know, making a compact little joke. Very often being very self-deprecating, too. You know, you can actually make a kind of a meta-commentary on what you're saying in the main part of your tweet in the hashtag. So it's sort of speaking back to yourself. And so, you know, because you're kind of inoculating yourself against criticism if you're making fun of yourself through a hashtag. Mm-hmm. So we see all these very creative uses that have proliferated, and hashtags have spread from Twitter to other social media, Instagram and so forth, where they use that as, you know, for similar purposes. This is actually the third year that we've had hashtags as a category for Word of the Year. We sort of added it. Hashtag itself was selected several years ago as the Word of the Year. But then we introduced a category for hashtags, even though, you know, very often it's, you know, a multi-word phrase that's kind of put together in that form. But in fact, the very first year that we had that hashtag category, the hashtag Black Lives Matter won not just in that category, but overall for Word of the Year. And so, since then, we've seen, you know, we mentioned Stay Woke and other ones. You know, this year, for instance, in terms of its use for protest, we saw No DAPL, you know, N-O, no, D-A-P-L, you know, the abbreviation for Dakota Access Pipeline, where that hashtag ends up becoming a very potent vehicle for people to mobilize around a certain cause.
Okay, we have to go to Leanne in Toms River. Leanne, what's your word?
I was just wondering how you guys feel about the phrase on fleek, usually referring to eyebrows.
I love it.
Sure. Well, that's another one that we looked at a year ago when, was it a year ago or 2 years ago? It's kind of blurring. But we did actually look at that because that really came out of nowhere about 2 years ago, I want to say. And so it was one that American Dialect Society definitely looked at, because that's a great example of the way that these days a slang term like that can seem to come out of nowhere. In that case, it was a Vine, you know, video that was, you know, just made by
the young woman. Exactly. I can see her sitting in her car.
Right.
I guess she had just come from getting a facial and her nails and hair did.
Yeah.
And she's talking about how everything was great. And she said, my eyebrows on fleek. And all of a sudden, anything that was orderly from airplane tails to cars in a row to bicycles, everything
that's
was
right.
on fleek.
That's right. I mean, you know, it almost took over from an earlier slang expression, on point. So on fleek became the new on point. But, you know, again, it's interesting to see how a term like that can bubble up. And then once it becomes popular, some people are like, oh, that's played out. That's already done, you know, because slang very often has that kind of short shelf life. As soon as it gets too popular, there are people who feel like it doesn't have the cachet it had when it started out. It's no longer something to mark an in-group if everybody's using it. Mm-hmm. And so something like that, you know, could happen to On Fleek or, you know, other terms that were popular for a while, but then, you know, might get a little overplayed once, you know, once everybody catches on and you see like Denny's or whoever.
Oh, God.
there were all these brands that were trying to pick up on, you know, new slang expressions, especially ones coming out of African-American slang, where it just seemed like they were trying way too hard.
Can you imagine? Come into Denny's. Yeah. Our pancakes are on
no,
fleek.
No, they really did that type of thing.
That's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've got to find this. Let's go to caller number one, Nick in Queens. Nick, are you still with us? Nick, are you there? Well, we can't.
But words like big league, where essentially it was big league that was sort of hijacked because no one quite knew what he said. How is that working its way into his lexicon? And also, the way he pronounces words. For example, at the press conference today, instead of saying industry, he kept saying industry, like the dust in the middle of it being the primary syllable. And will that be one more thing that he ruins in this country?
Ben?
Okay, well, sticking to the language, Bigly was a fascinating one, and that actually won in a new category that we had for this year, WTF, Word of the Year. And I won't spell that one out.
No, that's one of the words you can't say.
Well,
it's on this list.
So that was fascinating because, you know, Trump kept using a word that people heard as Bigly, B-I-G-L-Y, in the debates and other, you know, sort of televised speech. And when you actually analyze carefully what he was saying, it was actually Big League, L-E-A-G-U-E, but he was using it in this unusual way, treating it like an adverb that could come after a verb, like we're going to win big league. But because it's the way he said the word, very often that g sound at the end was not fully released, it sounded like bigly to many people, perhaps most people, when they heard it, for instance, in the debates against Hillary Clinton. And so people were looking up bigly, you know, on the night of the last debate, I think it was, there were people, you know, searching Trump bigly. That was like one of the top searches of that evening. And so people, when they hear something unusual, especially from a public official or someone running for office, will pick up on that. And certainly Trump gives us plenty of material to look at, both in terms of his pronunciation of certain words, which might not be quite standard, let's say, as well as, you know, words and phrases that he comes up with that become kind of verbal mannerisms or tics for him.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Rich in East New Brunswick. Rich.
Hi, in East Brunswick.
East Brunswick.
Sorry about that. And right now we're on a Trump going over here. But I predict for the new year, overrated, because it seems that Trump uses that every time he tries to pull his latest person down a peg. And it's already being used to mock him. I've been seeing that a lot, even before he does it the next day, you know, expecting him to do it.
Right.
Overrated could be in the running for 2017. He will be president in a few more days, and Lord only knows how many people who will be deemed overrated just by the end of the first week.
Well, yes. And recently we saw that, of course, with Meryl Streep after her speech at the Golden Globes, where everyone predicted Trump is going to issue a tweet in the early morning that says that Meryl Streep is overrated, and he followed through with that. So it's clearly one of his favorite words, even when talking about someone like Meryl Streep. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the type of word that then gets used against him. Again, that's something that we've seen very often with these political words and phrases, is that it can come out of a politician's mouth who might quickly regret it. For instance, Hillary Clinton talking about the basket of deplorables, and very quickly that gets embraced by, in this case, Trump supporters who themselves identified as deplorables and were proudly calling themselves deplorables. Or on the other side, of course, nasty woman, which was used by Trump in that final presidential debate when he blurted that out about Hillary Clinton. And in a similar fashion, that became embraced right away so that you could get it on a T-shirt or a mug for Clinton, Hillary Clinton supporters who were sort of proudly embracing that term, nasty woman.
And but Pantsuit Nation is a hashtag.
Well,
right?
It was a Facebook group. It still is a Facebook group, very popular one, and soon to be a book, apparently. And people might have also been using that as a hashtag as well. And you know, it plays on the blank nation thing. You know, you could have like Red Sox Nation, or you know, various other ways of describing the supporters of a team or you know, something else that you're rooting for. And so Hillary Clinton, sort of the iconic pantsuit that she wore, then sort of becomes a stand-in for the candidate herself. And so Pantsuit Nation became that very popular Facebook group and, you know, a way of talking about Hillary's supporters in general.
Can we go back to what you called the WTF category? So the word of the year was, or the WTF word of the year, was that Bigley?
That was, yeah.
And what were some of the others? I don't think, one of them, I don't know if you can say, it's not on this list, but let's just say it was revealed in a video of Donald Trump and Billy Bush, and
yes.
I can just leave it at that.
Yeah, we all remember that,
yes.
Access Hollywood tape. And there were, again, other things that came out of Trump's mouth, like his pronunciation of huge as huge, and very often spelled when people were talking about either Trump or Bernie Sanders, who both have that, you know, grew up in New York City in the mid-20th century where you would drop the
Queens.
H sound.
Mm-hmm.
Queens and Brooklyn in the case of Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. We also had the word cuck, or cuckservative. And that's associated, again, with the alt-right, another important word of 2016. This term that was used against mainstream Republicans as a kind of a derisive term for when they were sort of seen as too moderate by the people who now call themselves alt-right. And so this word cuck, which is short for cuckold, and actually comes out of porn usage, which we don't have to get into, ended up becoming combined with conservative to have this new blend, cuckservative. So that definitely raised eyebrows and fit our category for WTF Word of the Year.
I mean, everything comes, eventually it all boils down to porn. It's, it sounds like. All right, so you deal with words. Clearly, you're all about words. It's fun to just sit and watch you talk about words because you talk about them with such fluency. But I have to know, what are the two or three words that just annoy you? Like, just the sound of them. It's like styrofoam rubbing together or nails on a chalkboard.
You know, I know about that phenomenon. You know, sometimes it's called like word aversion, and you know, people get up in arms or cringe visibly if you say certain words. Like moist is a famous example that apparently bothers a lot of people.
Really?
Fortunately, I don't think I experienced that kind of visceral reaction to words. If I did, I would be in trouble because I'm dealing with words all the time, and it would be a real problem if I said, "Oh, I don't like the sound of that word. Oh, don't use that word." So I try to be a bit all embracing. And you know, if there's any language that bothers me, it's not so much, you know, the sound of a particular word, but the use of a particular word. I mean, we talked about euphemisms and other forms of language where it's being used to cover up certain truths by using language that seems more acceptable. And so if there's anything that bothers me linguistically, it's probably that kind of euphemistic use of language where language is simply being used to sort of tidy up or cover over something that can't be talked about for whatever reason.
You know, okay, so you don't even have like the paper cut of words that it's annoying and I can't believe I heard it, but it doesn't make you cringe. You don't even have one of those.
None are coming to me off the top of my head.
Oh, that's a lot. I can see it. You've got one and you don't want to say what it is.
If you use it, I'll let you know.
Okay, well, I will, since you won't share, I will share.
Okay, what's
the word? Slacks.
Slacks. Okay, see, that's very interesting. What bothers you about slacks?
It's just the way it sounds.
Okay.
Slacks.
All right.
Well, I will say trousers. I'll say pants.
Right.
But slacks, I don't know what it is.
That's interesting. That's another one that often shows up on lists of words that people have an aversion to.
Oh.
So you're not alone in your feeling about the word slacks.
Is there another word that's out there that people...
Let's see. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, very often they have to do with body parts or bodily functions or bodily fluids or things like that. But let's see. Nostril is one that bothers some people. I don't, you know, but what else are you going to call it? There's only one word for nostril.
Right. And I mean, is it nostril or is it flared nostril, like dumpster fire? Is it?
Well, I think something just about the word nostril on its own. But it's interesting, like the word moist. It's not simply the sound of the word, because people don't have a problem with words that rhyme with it, like joist or foist or whatever. But it's the combination of sound and sense. There's something maybe about the oi sound, which also shows up. People don't like the word ointment or goiter or that oi sound. But when it's used in particular words that seem kind of icky for some reason.
This is so fabulous. I love this. So I know we're only 11 days into 2017. But has a word popped up that you are going to pay attention to, because by the end of this year, it's going to be the word everyone's using?
Well, I'm not so sure. And again, because of the Trump factor, everything sort of becomes unpredictable. So, the word that I would be looking out for is an old word, which we're going to be hearing a lot about, and that's emoluments. As in the emoluments clause of the Constitution, and whether Trump, even before he's taken the oath of office, is somehow in violation of that emoluments clause, which doesn't allow presidents to sort of take gifts from foreign governments or foreign leaders. So that's an unusual stuffy sounding word that shows up in the Constitution, but people are going to be looking at that in great detail, I'm sure, so we'll be hearing quite a lot more of emoluments.
You know, actually, that reminds me, the basic question is, how do you keep on top of all of this? How do you keep on top of language? Are you hunkered down with one screen on Twitter and one screen on Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and you've got talk radio on and the televisions are all ablaze just listening? Or do you have a method to keeping on top of what we're talking about?
Well, it does involve a lot of listening and a lot of reading. And again, things like social media make it so that you're constantly inundated by, new information, new language coming through the pipeline. So it can be difficult and it can be overwhelming. It can be quite daunting to try to keep up with the way that language is changing, because so much of it has to do with ever-changing current events and the way people want to talk about those things. And you can get kind of whiplash too. I mean, when things are really crazy, as it got this past election season. I also would just rely on other people filling me in on, hey, have you heard about such and such? I write a weekly column for the Wall Street Journal where I try to keep up with words in the news, but very often those are, not necessarily new words. They could have words or, be words or phrases with some history to them. And I pick apart the history of it and why we're using it now. It's a constant battle, basically, to really try to keep track of all of this stuff. It's helpful, again, with something like the American Dialect Society. If you get a few hundred people, language scholars and linguists and so forth, in a room together, and they've all been sort of keeping track in their own way, and they all have their own ideas. And so it doesn't all fall on me to be keeping track of these things.
You have a fascinating job. This has been really fun. I've been speaking with Ben Zimmer, language columnist for The Wall Street Journal, about the words of 2016 and this crazy year in language. If you didn't know, the word of the year is
dumpster fire.